Can you see this board, everyone? As I mentioned, the crisis period are attached to prophetic fulfillments. Some of them are simple, some of them are highly complex. And I would like to put on this board the longest one. It's partly on the chart. If you can imagine this timeline ending in 1844 from 457. I don't know whether you can see that. I must confess my writing is not all it might have been, but I have to tell my students, I get my own back when I write on the board for my having to read your writing on all your papers. The beginning of this period was 7 weeks, 62 weeks, and then another week, at which time the cross was, making 490 years. From 457, Daniel 8:14 takes you to 1844. There is a complicated way of doing that, known as the year-day principle. There is a simpler way of getting at that, known as the anniversary principle. How many of you have got Bibles here? Would you find 8:14 quick as a wink? Daniel 8:14. Tell me what the margin for days in Daniel 8:14 is. Daniel 8:14, what does your margin say? Any margin? Both of them singular? Now just let's get this first one. Are they both singular? In that Bible, they are both singular. Evening singular, morning singular. Now there was another one up. Yes? Evening singular and morning's plural. Okay? Yes? Both plural. Now you got one more. There's only one more possible. Both plural. Both plural, both singular, evening singular, morning plural, evening plural, morning singular. No more combinations possible. Now, which one is right? Three of them are wrong. Three of them are wrong. Which one is right? Both singular is the only marginal reading that is right. So if you've got any plurals, take your pen out and score them out. They are wrong. Now some of you are thinking, how on earth does he know that they're wrong? All you got to do is to look in the Hebrew. And the Hebrew says, Erev Boker. Have you got any margin with Erev Boker in it? Some margins do. Evening, morning, comma, Erev Boker. Some margins, King James. Erev Boker is singular. It's not days, it's day. It's day 2300. What kind of day? Cleansing of the sanctuary day. That's what it says. Day 2300, cleansing sanctuary. Starting in 457. How many times a year was the sanctuary cleansed? Once. So if I told you I would come to you the fifth Christmas from now, how many years would that be? Five. So if this was to be Yom Kippur 2300, what's he talking about? 2300 years. So you can get it the anniversary. You count 2300 Yom Kippurs and you will land on October 22, 1844. You do it by the year-day principle and you will land on October 22, 1844. I'm not going into any detail, but sometimes people are worried about 0 year and B1 and 81. I had a chickadee up at PUC that we were in class trying to settle this, and he was a puzzled young fellow. But the next class he came to, he had a roll of adding machine tape. Have any of you heard of adding machines? You have you? You're dating yourself, remember. We're going into prehistory when we talk about adding machines. Remember the ones that had a bar? You got your exercise too. You didn't need a Nordic track with one of those. You could just do this. Well, he got a piece of adding machine tape, drew a line in the middle of it, and marked out 2,300 and counted them. B.C. 457 he begins, 456, 455, 10, 2, 1, 1. He says, you were right. I've counted them. So if you have any doubt about 1844, count them. 457 is nailed. It's set in concrete. You can establish that without the shadow of a doubt. And you count 2,300 Yom Kippurs and you land on October 22, 1844. You take these 7, 62, 69, and 1, and you can work out all these details, 27, 31, 34, all these events have taken place. That decree and these events settle, fix the beginnings of 457. Now you come to 1844, 1843, 1798, 538, 508. These are the dates. 508 to 1843 is the 1335. Happy is the one that waits for the preliminary events to come to the 1335 days. 1843 was the sweet as honey year. Everyone was happy. They were euphoric. Christ was coming. 1844 was the bitter as gall belly year. These two are fixed. You can get the 1290 and the 1260. These ones are fixed. Now there's a date in 1840 that brings you here to an interesting point. The R day, month, and a year, 391 years, 15 days, that comes from this date is 1449, July 27, Yugoslav's Independence Day. You can do another one here, 150 years, that take you to a point here that's 1299, July 27. When you think of all these events helping to establish the termination, you can see that the mathematical precision of this prophecy is overwhelming. Now, if you want a footnote for each of those dates, your pastor will be happy to give you them. Isn't that right? These dates are fixed. They're a little complicated to get, but they can be fixed. The 2300th cleansing of the sanctuary day, ending in 1844, evidently was considered by the Lord an extremely important date, and so he gave all these evidences for the skeptical, so that you could work them out and see that somebody with an extremely capable mind, with a prophetic view, can give to the self-same day all these events to take place. The possibility of coincidence there doesn't exist. Now, as you look in your chart, at the end of each of these periods, somewhere along the line, came a prophet. Somewhere down at this period, since in every precedent that you get before, a prophet was raised, you've got to get a prophet. By the way, if I were an insurance agent, I would never insure the life of a prophet. Think about that. Expectation of life was pretty short. Thou that stonest the prophets, killest them that are sent unto thee. How often would I have gathered thee under my wings? Think about the prophets. Some years ago, I said to myself, I'm going to make a list of all the biblical prophets. I haven't done it yet. I can't do it. They're very elusive. They're not all called prophets. Some of them are man of God. Some of them, Spirit of the Lord came to so-and-so. The Lord spoke to so-and-so. So you've got to look through the Bible very carefully and collect all these phrases. My book, at the present time, they're probably were 120 or so in the history of mankind. And the prophets were hated. The prophets were ridiculed. They were persecuted. They were stoned. They were jailed. They were exiled. That's the part of the hazard comes with the job. And yet, the prophets proclaimed the word of God. Round about 1844, the Lord found a prophet that was his third choice. He tried Foss and Foy for their own reasons. They turned him down. Then he called a 17-year-old girl, Ellen Harmon, who on her marriage became Ellen White. Part of the preparation for survivors in every previous generation has been special messages by chosen prophets. Those who rejected the message of these prophets excluded themselves from the remnant survivors. Those who rejected the prophetic message excluded themselves from among the remnant survivors. Read the Bible. The things that are written before are written for our admonition. And see. Those who rejected Noah, as he took prophetic truth from Enoch, made it present truth, built an ark, did everything he could, invited them to get in. Those who said it had never rained. Never rained. Never going to rain now. Noah is out of his mind. They probably talked more vigorous language than that. But that was what they were getting to. They rejected the message that the prophet brought. And were drowned. They were taken. And eight survived. Connected with this prophetic message that prepares for the remnant, there is a proclamation of the gospel. What is the gospel? Come on now, don't give me some cheapy. What is the gospel? You got a text? I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes. That's what the gospel is. The gospel is the power of God to salvation to everyone that believes. The Greek word for gospel is euangelion. Eu means good. A eulogy from logos is a good word you say about something. Euphemy is a good word you choose in place of a word that is not so good. Eu means good. The angelion part of it is a proclamation. When Abraham Lincoln signed the proclamation of emancipation, that was the power of the state to liberate the shackled. Good news? Yeah, but that's a kind of a simplistic way. Much more complicated than that. It's a good, happy news, but it's the power of God unto salvation. Now let's look at it from English. The gos part of gospel is an abbreviation of God's. G-O-D apostrophe S. God's. And the S added onto the end is spell. It's God's spell. Now what is a spell? A spell is a formulary of words, sentences, designed to affect conduct and life. People who practice casting spells say things to affect, generally adversely, some person or persons. They cast a spell. Satan casts spells upon people. God casts spells. You know, Ellen White has made a very interesting statement that some people are so held down by Satan that they need the spell of a stronger mind upon them. That's the gospel. It's powerful. It's a divinely constructed word made up of many words that are God's power to bring about salvation to those who believe. Now, how does it work? How does it work? I can't give up smoking, somebody says. It's got a grip on me. I can't give up alcohol. It's got a grip on me. But the Word of God says, you may become an overcomer. The Word of God says, I will never leave you nor forsake you. The Word of God says, I will help you. If you believe that, then God will help you. And there are all sorts of people can testify that He helps. Years ago, when our little girl was small, she had a bicycle and the bicycle needed fixing. So I took it to a bicycle repair shop, within a quarter of a mile of the old General Conference building in Tacoma Park, that was run by a nice young man who was a Jew. And he and I got on very nicely. I said to him, you know, this has got to be ready long before sundown on Friday. He gave me Friday as the date he'd fix it. So I said to him, do you keep the Sabbath? No, he says, I don't keep the Sabbath. But my grandmother does. My grandmother does. He says, I can't afford it. I said, come on. There are at least 5,000 Seventh-day Adventists within whistling distance of us here, and they all prove you can keep the Sabbath. Why don't you keep the Sabbath? Can't afford it. But my grandmother does. Then I began to tease him. I said, do you practice kosher laws? No, he said, but my grandmother does. I said, do you pay tithe? No, I can't afford tithe. I said, look, there are 5,000 Adventists here who can prove to you that tithe works. You've given them the message. Well, he and I went on like this for a few minutes. But he fixed the bicycle nicely, and he opened his store every Sabbath and didn't pay tithe and didn't practice kosher laws. He was of age, and this is a free land. But he wasn't doing what he knew the Bible taught. To those who accept the Bible, it's the power of God unto salvation. When Molly died a little while ago, I got a letter from somebody I hadn't met since 1937. That's a long time. He told me he had long ago retired. When I met him, he was just a kid. And he worked in a shoe manufacturing factory. There were 9 or 10 people, men and women, young people, who would start with some part of the shoe, and they would each do something to it, and the last one on the line would put it into its box. His job was to buff insoles. Would you like to do that 8 hours a day? Buffing insoles? Man, I'd have to learn how to whistle before I could do that. But he did it. This was in the year 1934. If you remember, there was a depression on. This was in England. In the little town in which we were, there were 10,000 unemployed. And there was no dole, as they came to call it. No social security. And not long before, they had marched on the town hall. Thousands of people. They're going to tear it down and burn it. The government was not helping them. The chief of police happened to be an Irishman. They evidently talked it out back, and this guy said, I'll tackle the crowd. So he came out onto the steps of this pillared town hall, big, huge Irishman, and they were coming up, they were angry, and he stopped there on the top step, and he asked them what they wanted. And they were shouting and saying, so he had a voice that they could hear. This was in prehistoric days, you know, before they had PA systems. When they talked through the reverse end of a big ice cream cone. Remember the days? He got their attention. And he says, looks to me like you want to fight. And he took his jacket off and threw it down on the ground. He says, I love fighting. I'll take you all on, one at a time. Who'll be the first? Now this got him laughing, which is what he wanted to do. And then he talked to them of how stupid it would be to burn this place down, because they'd have to be taxed to build another one. And he sent them home. Now this young fellow had a job. He wasn't about to try to change it or lose it. So he asked the boss man. The boss man says, no, I can't give you the Sabbath off. So he asked me to go to see him. So the whole church prayed. We prayed, Lord, help us. So I went to see the manager, told him the story. He says, how can I do this? Can I take one fellow out of a group of 9 or 10, put a new man in there just for Saturday? So I said, I don't know anything about running a shoe factory. All I know that in these days when there's so many people who are not conscientiously believing anything, here is a young fellow ready to lose his job because he wants to serve God. Can't we help him to do something about it? He said, I don't know what I can do. But I went away. Now, here's the power of God unto salvation. He fired this fellow. And Thursday night was where their week ended. I don't know why, but new week started Friday. This is the last week. His name was Peter. About Tuesday, this boss man comes to where Peter's working, stands over him, and he knows there by the... He said, what are you going to do about your job? He said, I'm going to lose it. He says, you know, that's kind of foolish. No more jobs in town, you know that. What, you're going to scrounge with your parents? Are you going to live with them? Sort of a man is that? He says, I'm going to keep the Sabbath. He says, you're a fool. And he went away. Wednesday, he comes and does the same thing. I'd call that harassment, invented by the devil. And Peter stuck it. Wednesday night was prayer meeting. Peter comes in looking pretty glum. He says, tomorrow's the end. Thursday afternoon, this fellow comes again. Tells him the same thing. What a fool he was. How he was going to scrounge on his parents. And by this time, Peter knew he had lost the job. So he was a little more impatient. He says, I'm going to keep the Sabbath. And the boss slapped him on the back and he says, I see you're determined to have it. You can have it. Now Peter was walking on air. Friday afternoon comes and he had got the Sabbath. That was an agreement. From an hour before sundown on Friday to an hour after sundown on Saturday. They used to work 6 days a week. So the boss man came to him and went through the same ritual. And when he says, I'm going to keep the Sabbath, he says, but you don't want to lose the money, do you? No, he says, I don't. He says, well, I've got a fellow that used to come in to take the covers off the sewing machines and all the rest of it they had an hour earlier. Would you like the job? He'd lose the money on Sabbath. This meant that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he'd put in an extra hour and he only worked 4 hours Saturday. So the first week he decided to keep the Sabbath, he was 1 hour better off. And Peter reminds me, writes to me, all those years after, of the impression that the gospel made upon him, that it was the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believes. Take your stand on it, and it works. It's God's powerful message, that taken at face value, and believed and lived upon is the power of God unto salvation. It works. Now every prophetic period that you saw on that chart and others that you could put onto that chart has a unique kind of gospel preached to them. And not all the same. Have you ever met a Seventh-day Adventist preacher who said you've got to build an ark, a boat, in the middle of Nebraska to house all the animals, that there's going to be a flood? What would you think if your pastor preached that on Sabbath morning? Boy, the conference president's phone would ring off the hook. He's gone berserk. See, that's not the gospel we preach today, but that was the gospel preached by Noah. He doesn't preach that the 70-year captivity is finished and you've got to go from Babylon to rebuild Palestine. That was the message that came from God to Ezra and Nehemiah. He hasn't got to preach the gospel that any day now the Messiah is going to be manifest among us on earth. That he's going to wear shoes. And that I'm not worthy to loose his shoelaces. That's not the gospel preached today. And the word that is used in the first angel's message is the everlasting gospel. The word is ion. In Old Testament it's olam. It's an age from which we get ion, from which we get eon. Eons upon eons. How long is an eon? Indefinite. This is a period of time unknown to man but known to God that when it is finished its purpose ends. Now we use the word age. When did the Middle Ages begin? Just for fun, when did the Middle Ages end? These are very difficult to impossible to answer precisely. An age is a period known to God, unknown to man, when it's finished its purpose, comes to an end. So for every age, there is a gospel that lasts through that age. That's the significance of everlasting. That's why it's applied to the fires of destruction. It's a period unknown to man, known to God, that will accomplish its purpose. And the fires will not die out until the purpose is accomplished. So the everlasting gospel that is applied by the prophet in and around 1844, that has to do with the cleansing of the sanctuary, the ministry of Christ our high priest, and the message that is to go out into all the world to prepare, so that when our name is called up there, we will be ready. That's the stress that we've got to give. We've got a special stress to give. And at every epoch, there has been a believing remnant that accepted that message and lived by it. They were the survivors. So when the gospel that is tempered to the age, the first angel's message, that in a day when evolution holds sway, we've got to proclaim the worship of Him that made heaven and earth, the sea and the fountains of waters. That's an emphasis we've got to give. Ages where they believed that God was the creator, nobody needed to press that. But in this age where it believes that, I think the God of evolutionists is time. Tempus. Either tempus or theos, from which you get theology. If you can't answer a question, add on a billion years. Haven't you noticed that? This thing evolved in, but it couldn't evolve in that time. Well, toss another billion or 2 billion. First time I went to the Grand Canyon was 1947. And I listened to a lecture given by a handsome young man with a nice hat, college graduate, or working his summer wait in order to graduate. And he told us a wonderful story. And what I remember most was it took the Colorado River 2 billion years to scoop out the gorge. It happened to be exactly 10 years later that I went in 1957. Our little girl was then 10 years old, and I sat there and listened. I stood there and listened in the rotunda overlooking the canyon. And there was another handsome year. He was really a good looker. Nice uniform, nice hat, sharp, well-shaven, eloquent. But he told us it was 4 billion years. And I remember that. And in 1965, the General Conference organized a geoscience trip, and I was one of the 42 men that were sent on it to be educated. And I was delighted to go. And I wound up there with this group of teachers. And we listened to another handsome young man earning his way through college. But his figure this time was 6 billion. And then he asked for questions. And Simple Willie puts up his hand. I want a question. And I said, I came in 47, and it was 2 billion. I came in 57, it was 4 billion. I now come in 65, and it's 6. What am I to believe? He looks down on me with a grin all over his face, and he says, Sir, we only tell you what we're told to. Okay, that was fair enough. Perfectly honest. He was told to do that. They'd tell any story they were told to. So we live in an age when time is the answer to the solution of creation. Give it another couple billion. Probably will work itself out. We've got to meet that by saying, we worship him that made heaven and earth, the sea and the fountains of waters. Now, what would this third grade dropout, Ellen Harmon, know about geology? What would she know about geology? Well, on this trip came her grandson, Arthur White. And he brought along mimeographed. You remember when they had mimeographed machines? His were mimeographed. Xerox was a gleam in somebody's eye. Mimeographed 350 pages written by Ellen White on geology. If I asked you to take a piece of paper and write down all you know about geology, what size paper would you need? A 29-cent stamp? The back of it? And this third grade dropout had written all sorts of things. I was not aware of it then. But when they were collected, have you ever wondered how the bristlecone pines could be more than 5,000 years old by tree rings when the flood was much less than that away from us now? You read what she said about that? In Spiritual Gifts, how God saved certain trees and plants for after generation. And they hadn't heard of the bristlecone pines when she wrote that. They were just scraggly old wrecks up in the White Mountains. It wasn't until the 50s when they realized how old they were. And the National Geographic published that wonderful article. Preach the Creator. Give all the evidence of his creative, sustaining, maintaining power. Now the judgment hour message comes. 1844. The emphasis there is the hour of his judgment is come. Worship God. So the prophet that rises at that time must bring a message that is saturated with the sanctuary cleansing, with the judgment, with God as the creator, and therefore the emphasis on the memorial of his creation, which is the seventh day Sabbath. Noah didn't need to do all that. Ezra didn't need to do all that. But these last days, the final remnant survivors. This is the message that they must believe. And God raises up the prophet who takes this message and applies it with clarity and eloquence and power. Right at the right time. He gives all the time elements needed so that we know when we've got there. He raises up at the right time a prophet with the same emphasis that the Bible gives. Around her a nucleus forms. Now, if you were the devil, what would you do? First of all, you'd produce many false prophets. Many. I've made quite a list of 50 years, this side and that, of 1844, of false prophets. How do you know they're false? Just take this criterion. Do they emphasize the sanctuary? Do they emphasize the judgment hour? Do they emphasize Yom Kippur day 2300 landing in October 22, 1844? Do they proclaim the Creator with emphasizing the Sabbath? Do they tell us that the judgment has come now? Now if you get all these clues focusing on one prophet, then you can be sure that that's the prophet.